Welcome. I am Zacha Newman. Some of you may have heard me mentioned on the podcast from time to time, very much in the background, managing the Inside Running podcast, partnerships, marketing, a bit of comms, basically keeping the boys in line. And that's a tough job as it is. But I'm jumping on this week off the bench to be part of a pretty special two-part segment we're running over the next few weeks. And we're bringing bringing you behind the curtain of a massive opportunity that we were afforded as Inside Running podcast to be a partner with Nike and to have Julian Spence head over to a special global event in Paris, the Nike On Air. And Jules was pretty quick to put his hand up for this, and an obvious choice given his background and to fly the flag for Inside Running podcast. He's back off the flight, and I've got a few questions and we've got a bit of a rundown on the trip. Welcome back, Moose.
Thank you, mate. Yep, I was pretty quick to put my hand up at the start. It was like, don't really know what's going on with this trip. Like, we had a little bit of an idea, but once we started to nut it out and I sort of looked at a little bit of the agenda and a little bit of the messaging behind it, I thought, oh yeah, you beauty, this really is up my alley and this is really exciting. It's not often you get to experience a big brand like Nike going all in to one of these events, and it was like a no expense spared type of operation over there. It was one of the most elite things I've ever seen before in my life. It's almost like it's like an open checkbook in terms of what they did for the event. The production level was absolute top notch. The people that they had there, like the best of the best, they had their CEO there, John Donahue, and then everyone below that. It was just, they were out and about, Nike.
Yeah, and I think we've obviously started to partner with Nike of late, and the fact that a podcast now, running podcast, that is now getting in the conversation, and I think, we publicly now say we're pretty proud about that we were given the opportunity to go over there and mate, it was an immersion experience. This, like, I know we had the messages coming through, the photos, and there was a drive set up, there was a lot of content coming through, we saw the agenda, it was packed. You were getting off that plane and you were straight to work and straight on the tools. Take us through what it was. Take us through the experience. I've seen the agenda, but it was packed, and give us a rundown when you got there.
So the whole event was centered around Nike On Air. So Air, we've all heard of the Nike Zoom Air and the Nike Air this and the Nike Air that, and the Air refers to that little air bubble that you see in some Nike shoes and that you feel in a lot of other shoes. And we've seen it a lot in the Alphafly recently. Like, that's the real standout feature of the Alphafly, is that Zoom airbag. And Nike's been using it for years, and they're basically just putting a highlight on the use of air technology in not just their running footwear, but also all the footwear throughout their entire range as the brand prepares to make product and to release product for their athletes for the Paris Olympics across all disciplines. So air was the theme, and the other theme was just almost reiterating Nike's dedication to innovation. So we see innovation from Nike at the top end, like we've seen the Alphafly, Vaporfly, we see the spikes getting used quite often. And then as we go down, like, I think Nike even would admit that they sort of lost their way in the training shoe market, and they're not quite as maybe reputable down there for the everyday punter as some of the other brands have been, or compared at least to their racing range. And so this was a bit of an exercise in opening the door, sort of going behind the scenes and getting a look at what's actually happening in in the design teams and in the concept areas around Nike product and how those things are changing for the future. And I don't think I've ever seen Nike actually open this up like they have. Like I work in retail. Nike's a distributor of mine. Like I'm a customer of theirs, and they're still very tight-lipped around what happens in the future. And so this is the first time they've sort of opened that up and gone, have a little look at what's going on. Have a look at some product from 2 years from now, maybe 3 to 5 years from now. So that was really exciting to see that, like obviously as a shoe guy, but also as a runner, like just to know that things are changing and how Nike are implementing, obviously, their airbags in different product and whether we're going to see more of it. And clearly we are. But yeah, so in terms, yeah, sorry, in ter- you
I was go on. Say, like just quickly, so you've obviously been to a lot of product launches. You've been over to headquarters over in the US before, but on this level, to see this amount of transparency and like openness this early out, like was this unheard of for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like so some of the names that we had there, for like John Hoke, he's the chief innovation officer for Nike. Like he's basically his job is to inspire the designers. I'll read his resume out later or his LinkedIn profile as the boys would love, but he's an absolute like guru in the design world. He's been at Nike a long time, but he's done a lot of other things, and so he was there chatting about design and concepts and things way above my level of creativity. I got no real idea. I like to touch and feel, but he talks about how they dream these sorts of things up. And then they had their proper top designers there, like Tony Bigner was there, who used to be the VP of innovation. And now that's Kathy Gomez, who is that. Tony's basically head of running footwear. So he's in charge of making running shoes for Nike, and he's been charged with pretty much getting them back up to the top, especially through the training area. So he's there talking, giving presentations, question and answer. And then you've got guys like Leo Chang and Elliot Heath, who are actual like product line managers and full-on designers. And we have access to them to chat about, and they're showing us things that they've come up with. That it's not just in the shoes we're seeing now, but they're in shoes in 2 to 3 years from now. Like most brands keep this very hidden and are very secretive about this. And there is some stuff I can't talk about on these podcasts, but there was a lot they opened up.
Kid in a candy store for you, mate.
Yeah, it was. It was. And a lot of these people are famous to me. They're the ones, it's like going to a restaurant and having the famous chef come out and have the meal with you, you know, and talk to you in detail about the meal you're eating. It's like going to a Michelin star restaurant and having that happen. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. A pinch me moment really is a full running Nuffy that you are, shoe geek, worked yourself up through retail as a youngster, slinging shoes and now an owner of a store, to then be amongst those kind of people with, a brand and of Nike.
It was a different perspective I had to some of the other crew. So for instance, APAC, who Australia Pacific area, like they sent over obviously myself, Inside Running got the gig, and then on the trip was a lady from Vogue, and then someone from Rush magazine, Sneaker Freaker had a rep there, and Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, I think it's GQ magazine. And these weren't like the little whipping boys and girls. These were some big dogs from those brands. So it was mainstream media. And then if you have a look at some of the media outlets from even just the US that were there, like pretty much where I read my information, they were there. So I was sitting down, had breakfast with a lady from Wired magazine. And she was talking about like what she was going to write about and the angle of her story and all this. And I was like, geez, these guys are a bit more professional than me. But I had the perspective of sort of the shoe owner and the runner to help me out a little bit. Yeah.
Sure. So that was Tuesday. You got to meet the crew that you were going to be cruising around with. And then Wednesday, pretty early start, mate.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, woke up 3:30, full jet lag mode, like staring at the roof. And so I thought, oh, look, I'll get up and I'll go for a walk. The knee's not, I'm not supposed to be running, so I'll go for a walk around Paris at 4 a.m. And so I just started. It was one of the most incredible things I've ever done. Just got out the hotel, pitch black. No one. That city dies overnight. Like there was no one around and no one running or walking, or there was no like nightclubs or 24-hour joints or anything. I was just walking through some streets that have probably, I don't know, been there since fucking forever. I don't exactly know, but some of the like oldest buildings I've ever seen, I'm walking past. I decided to go down to the Louvre, walk past the Louvre, not a single person around. I just stood there staring at it for a while. I'm like, one day I'll think back and go, you were at the Louvre by yourself, just checking it out. So that was pretty cool. Then we went to the air immersion event. So they had a gallery or an exhibition that detailed a few different sort of aspects to the presentation. So the first, we had a little chat with John Hoke to begin with. This was in a big old, it was like an exhibition center, I guess, but it's like a Paris exhibition center. So it feels like you're in the Da Vinci Code when you're walking up these stairs, and it's like a huge old building, and there's like statues around it. And Nike had made these statues of, I think it was six different athletes. And these were massive, big orange statues that stood out like a sore thumb. And they put them outside the building. There was no explanation. So all the public walking past, all they could see are these huge images. There was a Paralympic fencer. There was a soccer player, Mbappe. LeBron James was one of them. Victor Wembanyama, however you say his surname. And I think Shikari Richardson. So they're like huge, big statues. So it was pretty epic entrance. Yeah, and then we had a chat with John Hoke, and he talked us through air. So the history of air. So they had all the different shoes that have used air over the past, like different sports. There was on like a conveyor belt that ran around the room with a lot of digital displays. Then we walked through this hallway that had all the collaborations the different artists had worked with Nike. So I walked through with the guy from Sneaker Freaker, Seb, and he was losing his shit on that. He said some of the shoes in there were just priceless, like these collaboration stuff.
Tags on, mate. Did you?
These were well locked up, well behind the displays, and there was security everywhere. But yeah, that was cool. And then we went into the building that I like, the little area I like the most, because I walked in and saw a shoe I'd never seen before in my life on a display. And I was like, what the hell is this thing? And then I walked up, had a little feel, a little play. I couldn't really touch it, but I reached out and pushed a few foams in and all that. and then they had colors set up around the room of the new Spike range. So I'd never seen these in person either. I've only seen images of the Max Fly 2, Victory 2, Vape, Dragonfly 2. And then all footy boots, like the Mercurial, like there's a real special Mercurial coming. And then all the kits. So they had all these mannequins and displays set up of all the colors that the countries will be wearing for the Olympics. That was pretty cool. Yeah, and then we checked out the Pegasus 41, which drops in June. So that's a new, like it looks like a really good update on the Peg. But the shoe that I saw was called the Pegasus Premium. And it's a running shoe. It's a mileage shoe, but it has a Zoom bag that runs through the middle of it the entire way, sandwiched between, I think it's Zoom X Foam and maybe React X Foam underneath. So, we've seen Zoom in the race shoes, and we've seen it hidden before in the training shoes, but this was exposed the whole way. So yeah, we got a little run through from that from Tony Bignall, who was like, I mean, again, you got the head of footwear talking about the shoes to you, which is pretty cool. So that was pretty much the display and
overload of the senses.
Yeah, it's like it was kind of like a museum exhibition. They did it really well. And then we went straight into media interviews. So Nike have pretty much rolled out their entire like top end team, all the executives to the media. And so we were allocated interviews. The first one off the bat for me was with Matt Nurse, who you'll hear from later. And I'll give the brief on him later. And then I also had Kathy Gomez at the same chat or in the same sort of building. Then we actually chatted to Sam Kerr as well. So Sam Kerr is a Nike athlete. She was in a room with big knee brace on, obviously got the injury right now. Like I was there, this was a full group interview with the whole APAC team. So all the fashion crew were there asking her questions about that. So I kind of stood to the back a little bit for this one. And she was cool. Like as soon as
interesting seeing a star like that being in, like the amount of people around her, how she handled the media and the questions.
Yeah, so very much a lot of handlers. So around the area, just because we're talking absolute megastars, and I didn't quite like it didn't really hit home until I walked into the room, and I'm like, oh, it's Sam Kerr, soccer. And my immediate thought is, I don't really care about soccer. And then I like looked again and I'm like, oh shit. Immediately all I thought about was that goal that she kicked in the World Cup. And I remember thinking, she's the best in the world at this, at soccer. Like the best in the world at soccer, the biggest, most played sport in the world is sitting in the room next to you. And you're like, wow. And then it massively hit me. I was kind of starstruck, and I don't feel like I get that very often. But she was, she has that power. Yeah, she really. And you could see the fashion crew. They were in awe. Like she was the one. You like Kipchoge's big, but I reckon she outstars Kipchoge in that world.
Yeah, global phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, after that, had a bit of spare time, so I had some beers. And actually, I've met Tony before, so Tony Bignall, and I caught up with a beer with him. So we sat down, and Elliot Heath came as well, so product line manager, and he's one of the you would have heard from him in the last podcast. So we sat down and we had some beers, and we talked about running shoes of the future, and that was, I mean, I got a lot of insight into what's happening and what's coming up from Nike in the future. So that was an off record chat. So that was pretty really cool. But yeah, we can't chat too much about that one. And late that arvo, we got word that we were off to the Paris versus Barcelona. I think it's Champions League quarterfinal.
This message come through from you that you had scored some tickets was it UEFA Cup? Was it
UEFA? I don't even know, mate. I suck at soccer. I knew it was a quarterfinal or something, but
we get out
of the stadium.
There'd
been a bit of a threat. Like I think ISIS had made a threat something. Or I tried not to read about it too much. But we got there and there was a pretty solid security showing at the event. And then walk in and we're like, I'm like, keep walking towards the ground. I'm like, holy shit, we are very, very close to the ground. We had this row. I think it was about like 10 back from the front. Then it was the pitch. And you were seeing it up close. I was, and it was a good game, but I was so fried because I'd been up since 3:30 that I fell asleep for like the last 15 minutes. And it was 2-2, and everyone, the whole crowd is going manic, and there's flares going up, and I was sound asleep, nodding my head.
Oh, there is going to be some football fans that this would give their right leg to be there, and
oh no, they'll be so angry. So angry, but I couldn't help it. Thursday. So that was Wednesday night. Thursday, I was supposed to get up early. I had an interview booked with Faith Kipyegon. Mm. This was one that was real stoked for, but we got to her hotel and her agent had let us know that she wasn't feeling well. So had to cancel that, which was a shame. And I thought I might not end up with any athlete interviews, which I actually didn't really, but I cut a couple of good ones the next day. Mm. We went out and had this epic lunch at the Eiffel Tower. So this was some of the best hospitality I've ever experienced on any of these trips. This was another level. Mm. Had one of the best steaks of my life overlooking. I had some snails the night before, actually pretty good. Like,
yeah. You
wouldn't think so, but tasted snails. Pretty good. Pretty good. French food is delicious. Have you been to a French restaurant?
Yeah, I've been to Paris, and I have had some French food even here. But yeah, it's too lighty dark for me, mate.
I was just going all in. I would like, I'm like, I'm in France. Let's get the snails. Add beef tartare or tarte or whatever. Mm. Good, delicious. Had a glass of champagne at this restaurant. Cost, I think it was €39 for the champagne for a glass.
A glass.
Yeah. And it was by far the best champagne I've ever drunk in my life. I'm never going to be able to drink it again.
Rokes has just fallen off his chair.
Yeah. Let him know I paid for it. Company card over there. No, Nike looked after us. They were fantastic. We had two ladies there, Kerry and Abby, and they was like, those guys could run the Olympics, I reckon, if you gave them the job. So the main event, though, was that night. Like, this was the sort of event everyone was waiting for, but we didn't know what was happening. So it was all very much hush-hush. We'd seen a few sneak peeks of some athletes who were getting around the immersion area, like, and thought, oh, what's going on there? Why are they here? And we all walked through. Like, this was a serious influencer type event. Like, there was some big hitters here from the fashion world. A lot of designers and artists had gone. We walked into this. Well, for me, big time. I was sitting 15 meters away from Travis Scott, who was sitting in the front row, and that was cool. It was all blacked out. It was this big sort of light, like this big digital presentation. And then all of a sudden the screen lifts and you've got a lineup of 20 of the biggest athletes in the world, all the Nike athletes there, all wearing their kit for Paris Olympics. So like Kipchoge was there front and center in the running kit, Kenyan running kit. You had... I don't think Sam Kerr was out there in the Aussie kit because they don't sponsor the Aussie team. But basically, all the kits that Nike sponsor. So you had, I think Chinese athlete was there, Canadians were there. Who else was there? I think French. There was a French player there.
Basketball and basketballers.
Yeah, there was lady basketballer AJ Wilson was there, which was awesome. You had the fencer. Chloe, she had her surname. She's the skateboarder. She's like 14 years old. Maybe she's even younger than 14. She might be 12. And she's the skateboarder from Australia. So she was there wearing it wasn't Aussie kit. She came out after that in the next thing. So they all went behind. They just showed off their kit pretty much. And then the screen went down, smoke went up, and they got changed into what, like, this crazy kit, whatever they had. It was like fashion show, really. Yeah. And they all came down and they did, like, they actually had full on like model type. I don't know.
So they're having a bit of fun with it as well. I'm guessing they've kind of said, hey, like, because everyone saw the Kipchoge photos that were going, once that dropped, it went viral.
Yeah.
It was Serena, I think, was involved with some of those.
Serena came out. She was front and center. She was the star of the show. But they were having fun, but also they looked amazing. Proper designers have come in and made this kit. They looked incredible. The Sha'Carri Richardson dress, I'm going off what the fashion people were saying, but they said that it was just amazing.
Also, so that the fittest people on the planet.
That's right. That's intimidating. That was full on Nike star power. They were all 15, 20 meters away from you, and you're just seeing the best of the best in the world, all in the one spot. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid, but it tastes pretty good.
The champagne tastes pretty good.
We went to a party afterwards in this kind of basement or warehouse type. I think it was an art gallery, but it was big concrete kind of space, and they had a skate park set up. It was a Converse party, and so big skate party. Again, I was too tired, couldn't really get into it, but you're just sitting there having a beer, watching skaters get around skate park inside a building. Pretty busy. I did think about Brady. He would have embarrassed himself there, trying to tell him everyone how good a skater he was.
So 2 days in, what have we got? Friday?
Friday, yeah. So Friday with the run. So we went out, we met back at the venue in the morning. I had a sneaky heads up that Eliud Kipchoge might be there for the run. But I got there and I asked Eliud, and he goes, no, he's been out 6 a.m. He went and ran the marathon course, or he ran a lot of the marathon course. So he's got a bit of a heads up on what the course will be like, because it is pretty hilly, the Olympic marathon course. So he got a first-hand look at it, and he didn't make our run club, unfortunately. But I did spend the majority of the run with Leo Chang, and he's designed KD's shoes, Kobe basketball shoes. And he was the brains behind the cavity in which the AlphaFly 3 Zoom Pod sits in. So that was a bit of a breakthrough for those guys in terms of how they can harness the potential of that shoe a little more. So I chatted to him about that and just about running in general. So that was pretty cool. Then we went upstairs and they had a sneak peek into the future. Basically, there was a little room. This was the no photo room. This was the no recording room. I saw some models that will be dropping later this year, early next year, and then even mid next year. So that was what excited me. But there was also some technology in there that some athletes are already using. They're not just footwear, but other technology that might help them recover.
You're really getting in the behind the curtain there. This is stuff that brands would never give you access to that far out in advance, that they're dropping stuff.
It's actually really surprising that we got a look at it. It's helpful for me as a store owner, because I know where to invest my money going forward, but you wouldn't expect it to ever go to the mainstream media like that. I mean, they can't take photos or anything, but it was pretty cool to see. And then I had a couple of other interviews with Elliot Heath, who I basically just drilled him around the specs of the new Spike Rangers. And then John Hoke, who is the big chief of innovation. That was the trip, basically. That was what we were there for. We were there to learn and ask questions and see what they got in store for us.
Yeah, just hearing that, and I've obviously seen some vision, and we've put a story together. This with a couple of reels dropping to showcase what you've been talking about. But you know, this innovation piece, and I guess the way this is a massive, almost for you as someone who's sort of been watching the brand, to then be kind of thrown back in and going, wow, these guys are really ahead of the curve. And was this a big, the way they've come back with this in this space, are you kind of thinking these guys are going to really turn the dial up in the next few years?
Well, honestly, I don't think they were ever not the leaders in the space, because we saw what they did with Vaporfly. We saw what they've done with Alphafly. We see their track spikes. They are leading in terms of performance product. So they are full gas at the top level. It just looks like that's where the attention has really been focused for them. And now what we're starting to see is the technology flow through the range. So we're starting to see it tear down a little bit. And I guess what we've never really seen is that curtain opened up into the process behind it. And there was a bit of a reputation, I think, developing that they weren't sort of creating like they used to. And this has just sort of shown people how much does actually go into it. So Nike has the biggest sports research lab in the world, pretty much, in the industry. So no one's doing sports science like Nike. Nike have more shoe designers than any other brand in the world. And they have, they've got innovation teams, they've got design teams, they've got cushion teams, they've got all sorts. And perhaps perhaps maybe it's a little much, but it's there, and the intention is there, the effort's there, the money's being put in, and we just we've never really seen it before.
In chatting, I know we've got some interviews we'll throw to later, but in chatting to the people you've referenced there, some of the real heavy hitters, the designers, the people that are managing to run the way they're rolling things out. But I guess some things, there's so much in their innovation and details, but is there some themes when you meet these people that are coming across, are you just seeing this consistent theme about what they're looking at and how they talk to you about things?
So the one theme was absolutely athlete feedback and athlete influence on the product. So you can do all the sports science in the world, but if the athlete doesn't like it, then it ain't going to work for them. So they're sort of going back to athlete driven product, and they're using feedback and testing for the not just the top level athletes, but even the average athlete out there. So that was a consistent theme across the board. But high level sports research as well as athlete driven feedback was sort of the theme that I felt was consistent, and also just the lack of ceiling in terms of what they think they can do. So not having limitations and encouraging creativity, and basically the focus is just providing those athletes in Paris with just the best tools that they can in order for them to perform. So there was a lot of Paris reference, because that is the top echelon of what we do, and they just want to put their athletes in the best possible position.
No, I think that's a good little segue into dropping in the interviews that you had with John Hoke and Matt Nurse, because I know, John, do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown on those two?
So John, he's the chief design officer from Nike Incorporated, which means all of Nike, not just one division. He goes across footwear, track and apparel. He'll go across skateboarding, lifestyle, everything. So John Hoke currently serves as the chief design officer. In his role, he leads Nike's global design team responsible for envisioning the footwear of sport. Hoke directs an international creative community of over 1,000 designers charged with inspiring, innovating, and designing hundreds of apparel and footwear styles each year. John speaks, writes, and promotes the power and possibility of design and creativity throughout the world. He is a permanent design fellow at the Pennsylvania State University, his alma mater, a member of Herman Miller, Inc.'s board of directors, an advisor to Piaggio Fast Forward, and a trustee at the Pacific Northwest College of Arts. Hoke also served as a national trustee of the Smithsonian, Cooper Hewitt National Design Museum. I told you he was a big hitter. Prior to Nike, Hope was a designer at Michael Graves Architect in Princeton, New Jersey. His work included architectural, industrial, and graphic design for a wide variety of international clientele. Mr. Graves served as a personal mentor until his death in 2015. Hoke holds degrees from the Pennsylvania State University, University of Pennsylvania, and Stanford University. And you know the crazy thing is? He's not an old guy. He's not like, he's a powerful dude. Like when you meet him, I was certainly felt like I was in the presence of someone who was very comfortable in knowing that they knew what they were doing, but he wasn't some old codger that's like got this, all this stuff done over 80 years. Like he's still a young dude. So that was John. We chatted, like, obviously I chatted to him a little bit about his field. And also these interviews, like I didn't have much longer than 10 to 15 minutes maxed out. I got cut off a few times. So that was the nature of it. Quick, sharp. We had a lot of media there.
To get access to these people.
So. Matt Nurse, though, he's Nike's Sports Research Lab Vice President. So this is the biggest lab in the industry. Matt leads a multidisciplinary team of researchers, scientists, and innovators focusing on biomechanics, human physiology, sensory perception, mind, and data science. Matthew's been at Nike with the Advanced Innovation Research and Development team for more than 20 years. In that time, he has previously worked as senior researcher for basketball, golf, and equipment. He has also worked on numerous advanced product concepts that have led to more than a dozen patents relating to footwear, apparel, and digital product applications. Matthew earned his PhD in biomechanics and medical science while working in the Human Performance Lab at the University of Calgary, Canada. So what Matthew tests is often the science behind the product that comes out. He's the kind of, like, I did a bit of research into Matt, and I found a lot of studies that he had published and co-authored related to footwear, running, pronation, and support shoes, minimal shoes. So I really needed more time with Matt, and I'm going to try to somehow go through the Nike channels to get him on our podcast.
Yeah, fantastic.
In a bigger way.
I've heard these interviews are great, and I think your lens through it as well, because it is easy to, there can be generic questions that you could probably ask these people to start with. If you're just a runner, but if you're doing the running, coaching, selling the shoes, being a store owner and your experience, you can really go under the hood with these guys. And you could sort of feel from your questions that a few times they were like, yeah, okay, this is good. I've got something to riff on here, because you're going a little bit deeper. So,
I would like to, we'll try to get some more time with some of them, but yeah, here we go. Enjoy the chats with those two guys, and we'll be back next week with some more.
Fire away. John, you're the dreamer and the innovator with concepts, and
yes,
you look on a different sort of plane to everybody else.
Yes.
How do you balance that with the science and the functional component of footwear as well?
Well, I think they're intrinsically linked. I think you can't dream about working for a company like Nike and painting the future performance products without having it being absolutely backed by science and proof. So I think the magic of Nike is the perfect blending of art and science, of form and function, of emotion and data. And I think, you know, one without the other feels lost to me. And, you know, as a dreamer, there's no better place to start with the actual raw material, the data, the listening to and knowing an athlete and knowing an athlete's body and what they're trying to achieve and what their ambitions and hopes and dreams are. And when that's packaged back to us, we'll call it the combination of anatomical science, mind science, motivational and confidence science. That's how it starts.
Okay. the product we're seeing today is, yeah, I'm not a fashionista, but it's quite beautiful to me as a runner. And so how do you find such a functional product and create something so nice looking as well? Like, at what point does functional get compromised for aesthetics?
Well, I think when design is done perfectly, there's an absolute balance of beauty and function, right? And I think what you see in the products we showed yesterday, and looking at sort of a glimpse into the future, there's this unique combination, if you will, that I think creates what you're discussing, which is this hard to decipher between form and function and beauty. And you know, part of this whole thing at Nike is we start by saying we have to functionally advance nonstop. Like that is table stakes. And then functionally advancing meet fearlessly beautiful product. Those can't be pulled apart. And that functional advancement and fearlessly beautiful have to also mean and fantastically creative. And when that's all put together in a combination, I believe an athlete and a consumer feels that. There's something is aroused inside of somebody to ask them to investigate further, to move, to touch the product, to put the product on, to get a sense of, you know, the love that we've created inside the product that stirs desire to do something, to find your PR, or to start from scratch.
That design process, that creative process, how do you inspire your designers and the people that are working on the floor, the kitchen?
Yep.
How do you inspire them?
Well, I mean, part of it is the idea that we have to be fearless, and we are the leader of the industry, and our job is to work closely with athletes, everything obviously backed by science, and then turn our imaginations wild with new technologies that we have. And really the job is to create the future, right? And to bring artifacts from the future today, and things that people couldn't dream possible, we are able to create. And that makes people usually stop and have to reappraise, like, so what have I been using, and where is this taking me, and how does this make me feel? So I move from just an item to an idea, a thing to a feeling, a transaction to an experience. And Nike is about ideas and feelings and experiences, and that's the economy of the future, of creating something that's desirable, functional, beautiful, and that gets people to go, I can perform. I can find my greatest potential.
Yeah. Nike's, I think, the pillars, is it called? The 10 sort of commandments?
Yes.
Yeah. How much does that influence your leadership role at Nike?
Well, I helped to create them.
Yes, so, there you go.
So being an author of some of the ethos of the company, I think they're vital. I mean, I think they're goalposts, right? And the goalposts continue to move, but how we start and what we believe and our purpose as a company never should change. You know, we talk about we create the future of sport, right? And the best thing about that is that sport is dynamic. Sport never stops. Athletes aren't going to say, hey, this is good enough. They're going to want more. And when you pair that ambition of an athlete with the imagination of a designer together, side by side, I mean, that's what moves the needle. That's what creates products that break barriers, you know, break boundaries and break records.
Can you give a specific example of something that you've seen one of your team create in the kitchen, mm-hmm. That sort of blew you away?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'll start with, you know, the AlphaFly work that we did about 3 or 4 years ago. And I remember seeing that for the first time and, you know, kind of being struck that, again, I had seen something that just came from the future, and knowing that that was designed to be a tool to break the unthinkable barrier of a two-hour marathon. And then you watch that tool being put to use by someone like Kipchoge, and you say, oh my gosh, that's an athlete dream becoming reality. And then watching that progression of that that wasn't enough, because at Nike the pursuit is everything. Is as soon as we're done with the Alpha Fly, it's like, okay, so what can we improve upon? Because it's always about new but better.
Yeah,
anybody can make new, any company can do new things. Only Nike can make things that are new and improved and better. And our continued commitment is that better is temporary.
Yeah.
Any improvement we make, we can improve upon every time.
I was lucky enough to go for a run with John Dimoff in 2019.
Mm.
And he was wearing something that day that I got a glimpse of today for future years. And that's, so is that an example of like what happens in the kitchen, that sort of how it influences? Because what I saw was a concept that no one had even considered before.
Yeah.
And he put it in his own shoes, and now we see it now coming to market.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the most magical things of the innovation team is that we are constantly exploring. I mean, I like to think we are in beta mode 24/7, 365, which in beta mode to me means we try stuff. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But always there are learnings. So by keeping ourselves in beta, every day we show up, it's like, what can we explore? What can we experiment? What can we try? Give it to an athlete, see what happens. Bring them back in. What worked, what didn't, adjust, adapt.
Yeah.
That is the incremental progression of both innovation and athletes and design that pushes Nike forward.
Nike owns the top tier product in running, the race product.
Like
guys have always been the leaders, you're still the leaders.
Yes.
As we go down the chain and we move through the back, middle to the back of the pack, we start to see more brands being maybe a bit more popular.
Yep.
How does a creative and innovation help those athletes and help to bring back some market share there?
Yeah, so this week, last night as a matter of fact, we announced the Peg Premium.
Yeah.
And the Peg Premium is a great example of the cascading effect of learning from a super shoe, which we did. I mean, I know the super shoe is a genre of product now. Nike created that genre years ago.
Yeah.
And so what you see in Peg Premium, you'll see in others, is you take that dramatic technological leap and you package that into the training product so that you have the super shoe for race day and then the super shoe technologies for the everyday athlete. And so you begin to make those connections. And again, as I just described, as soon as those connections are made, we make improvements and advancements. And so there's a rhythm and a choreography to concept cars, trial, test, learn, put something in, cascade that back down, move the entire industry forward.
Just speaking to your experiences with young designers coming through, what do you look for in a designer that really excites you?
That's a great question. I'm a 32-year veteran at Nike, and because of that, I have a little bit of a founder's mindset. So for me, when I think about the next generation of designers, it's very similar to when I started, and that is a restless curiosity, a deep sense of wonder of what's possible, a drive, a desire to take chances, an ability to conjure ideas into form and do that really quickly. And so I'm always looking for designers that are looking to break the status quo, that look at the boundaries of today and say, we can do better. And look at the products that we've made in the past and say, I can do better. And being able to use the new technologies at their fingertips, again, velocity and fidelity at breathtaking pace and scale, pushing us forward, pushing the company forward, taking us and taking our consumers someplace new. I look for that.
Yeah. And what's the biggest limiter to that that designer being able to express themselves in Nike? Like, what's the biggest limiter? Is it cost? Is it science or whatever?
At this point, my honest answer is there are no limits. Everything is in front of us. We can figure out costs.
Yeah.
We can figure out manufacturing disruptions and constraints. What I want is the deepest imagination possible, because where there is imagination, there is a willingness to break limits. There is a willingness to work through constraints and solve problems.
we've only seen running shoes really exist in the last 60 years. Even the last 50 years, we did not see a lot of real innovation compared to what we've seen the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Where is this going to be like an extrapolation, or
I think we are at a generational inflection moment in running.
And
I'll use racing as a point of the spear, but we now have the technological abilities in front of us, both materially and computationally, and then knowing the way the body and the biomechanics work to sort of have a Darwinian expansion, if you will, so that, you know, where your anatomy left off, we fill in those gaps. And I think that's part of our super cycle, where we think we exclusively know what's possible because we study the body and the athlete, and we now have our fingertips on the future. So I think there are no limits to what's possible.
I just have one more.
Nike
sort of went away from the in-store experience in a running level, moved away from specialty running and went direct, and now we're moving back again. How much does the consumer interaction, the touch and feel, influence how a designer looks at things? Like being able to make a product that's seen, felt, tried on. Does that differ does that change the concept or the process behind designing a product if you were simply buying that product online?
Sports is, and running as an activity, is predominantly physical. A little bit of mind sciences, but it's all physical expression, which to me means high contact, high sensorial engagements. So I'm thrilled to know that we're going back to those communities, because I think when we show up against our competitors and we're in the dialogue, the path of a runner who's intimately concerned with themselves and their own possibilities, their own limits, you know, I want to have our products right there with every competitor, side by side, to be looked at, to be discussed, and I'm confident that we can be the leader when we're there. I think, you know, runners are proven by companies that are there with them and their community at their point of sale.
Yep.
And, you know, being able to compare and contrast side by side in a treadmill or outside, and having this destination of obsession, where I liken it to a bike shop, where you just go because it's a cool place to hang with people that love what you do. You're there talking shop about shoes and your PR and your run last night and what you're doing tomorrow. I think that creates community. And so I think where Nike has stepped away during the pandemic, we're stepping back fully. Yeah. And I think that is what's going to create an even deeper sense of commitment and intimacy with our company.
Excellent. It's great to hear. Thanks for your time.
My pleasure. Thanks, mate. Well, good, great questions.
Thank you.
Okay, Matt. You're involved in the real nerdy, geeky stuff around running. I'm going to talk about running in particular today. But I'm really interested in some of the more recent testing innovations that you guys do in the lab around running footwear. So is there anything new that sort of popped up the last few years that you're like, hey, we could really use this to look at running footwear in particular?
From a technology point of view?
Yeah, or like the testing that you're using. How is it different now from when it was 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think predominantly a lot of the tools that are used today are modern, more sophisticated, more accurate versions of what's been around for a long time. You know, whether it's video-based photography, the old days it was with film and hand digitizing. Today it's obviously it's digitally based, the resolution's higher, we can process the information quicker. I think the biggest shift for us though is as we look at the types of runners that we work with, whether you're a first-time jogger, a female athlete trying for the first time, all the way up to, you know, the people who wake up every day and dream of two-hour marathons, the breadth and diversity of runners that we work with, you know, as soon as you open that aperture, the styles of running also rapidly increase, the body shapes and sizes, the speeds they run. I'd say that's probably the biggest shift for us in the last 20 years.
Okay.
Maybe one other point too is, there's always a focus on faster, but for us, it's how do you perform? But we all have a different definition of performance. It might just be feeling better after that 20-minute run at lunchtime. Protection and the tools and technologies that allow us to understand athletes on their journey, and also, feel and how that product sort of feels with them, both at the beginning of the run, but at the end of the run, is really important to us.
Yeah. Well, just on that, the probably the biggest barrier to someone performing at their potential is injury,
yes.
Especially in the new runner, and I mean even at the high end. So, what's Nike's philosophy on how footwear can influence injury?
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think at the lowest common denominator for us is do no harm, but we know, and depending what literature gets cited, people say anywhere from 30%, and you hear some really high numbers, 40, 50, 70%. Of runners get injured. So at any given time, we have a study going on. We do a lot of prospective studies looking at what are those predictive factors that might predispose somebody to injury, which of those factors can be influenced by the footwear levers that we have that we can change inside footwear. And then obviously, how do we get prescriptive with that understanding to be able to give people the best types of footwear? So as you've seen in the past, some of the things we did with Invincible and with Infinity in terms of the prospective sort of injury, we always have that kind of research going on, and we're always looking at trying to reduce the risk of overuse injury. Certainly, some of the tools that we have also, like anything, footwear plays a role, but you and maybe, opportunities that you might have through training, through muscular deficits, other factors also can play a role. And we try and also help athletes sort of understand not only themselves, but what's the right product for them.
Yeah, well, you've done a bit of research I saw on foot mechanics and, yep. and potential injury causation because of that. So how does that sit with Nike at the moment in terms of how you develop shoes and what type of stability aspects are considered in a shoe?
Yeah, I think we look at a lot of different things. I think if you go back 10 years, everybody in the industry was talking about eversion, mm-hmm. and eversion rates. People talk about the loads on the knee sort of abduction or AV abduction moments. I think we look at the multifactorial. So, we look through a speed lens, a body type lens. We do a baseline assessment of every single athlete to understand them before we even consider them as a runner. And then obviously, as we look at some of the programs and tools and technologies we have, we follow runners. We get tens of thousands of kilometers of athletes running out in the wild, providing feedback to us in terms of pain, injury, soreness. And then we try and understand which of those factors in footwear, whether it's stability, cushioning, rocker, help influence and predict injuries. I would say nobody's figured out what's the single solution yet, but we're working on it. And yeah. I would say we're leading the pack.
Yeah. And so in terms of testing that you've done on Zoom bags, yep. or the Air technology versus the foams, the new foams you have, like for instance, Zoom X, what are the sort of differences in response rate and how are you using that testing to develop the new product?
Yeah, I think when we look at even the transition as we went from, say, like the AlphaFly 2 to the 3, every single time we're looking at what are those opportunities, could be stability, could be transition, and those might be things we measure objectively. It might also be feedback that we hear from the athletes in terms of what their feel is in terms of responsiveness or ride. So we do look at stability, we do all of the biomechanics, we look at physiology and sort of your body's physiological response, not just in the moment, but also muscle damage after a run. So whether we're looking at different markers of muscle damage or ultrasound or, and then ultimately for us, if we're looking at injury, it's how do we follow you over the course of an entire training program and quantify that injury rate. But, with one of the beauties is as we look at our Air technologies, particularly Zoom Air, what we do with plates and the rockers, what we do with ZoomX, ReactX, we understand enough now about how those levers work that we can shift loading in different parts of the body. Mm-hmm. Can we more load the lower, like sort of knee down? Can we shift that to above the knee? And that's what we systematically do as we look at some of our products.
And is that a potential kind of a line that you can bring out? Is potentially, like if you can make a shoe that helps someone with foot pain, help someone with knee pain, and then you can sort of introduce that as a marketing type of campaign?
Yeah, the goal for us is always to do that. How we market it, I'll leave to people smarter than me on the marketing side. You know, I think when you look at Vaporfly 4%, we call it 4% because it was a shoe that we knew had a 4% change in running economy at the very baseline. Mm-hmm. When we think about injury and some of the work that we've shared around sort of Invincible and the Infinity, we are constantly trying to reduce injury rates, but it's multifactorial. So to say we have one single thing just yet, we're not there. Our goal, though, is can we bring you in, can we assess you and give you the right training for your body and the right product to wear so that your risk of injury is going to be reduced in the long haul.
Was the 4% the research that you came to, or that you can made these conclusions from after that, was that the biggest light bulb sort of moment you had in the lab, or has that been the biggest example of research playing out in a successful shoe?
I think so. You know, one of the things breaking two, when we think about the original 4% shoe, it actually started, we were just looking at fatigue. So in innovation, we don't always start with let's build another shoe. We say, what's a big issue? And when you think about like faster, people talk about speed. The different things that you can think about being faster, is it faster top speed? Is it linear? Is it multi-directional? And we started looking at fatigue because every single person on the planet at some point experiences fatigue, whether you're Eliud Kipchoge, you know, trying to get that term out, or you're a first time runner. And it's a limiting factor. So we started looking at the shoe levers around cushioning and plate stiffness and geometry, stack heights, heel to offset, all the levers we can pull, mass distribution. And our goal was to originally get 3%, right? Individually, these things have been looked at, you know, in the literature and by us, you know, multiple industries for years. And typically when you add them up, 1 + 1 + 1 rarely equals 3. But as we kept diving down, and really you have to treat it as a system, it's not just cushioning or just a plate, it's the system and how they come together. You know, initially, surprisingly for us, it was 4%. We were hoping for 3. Yeah. Obviously, as we've gone on from there, you know, we've gone on to the Fly Next percent, and now with the 3.
What number is the 3 at?
It's higher. I think one of the challenges, though, is when we did the 4%, the baseline in 2017 was quite a bit different than the entire industry. Mm. I mean, we'll take a little credit. The entire industry has shifted as a result of that work. So if we compare it to a 2017 shoe, we know what that number is. It's probably an unfair comparison by today's standards, but we know it's incrementally better every year, and we're confident it's probably the best shoe you can find.
Okay. One last question.
Yep. How have the results of the testing been between taking in that mid to backpacker versus the elite end? What are you finding is different?
Yeah, I think for us, when you look at, if we look at the Alphafly, for example, the 3, one of the things we learned from the 2 was certainly some of our lighter female runners weren't finding the transition as enjoyable. So what we were able to do is go back, revisit the transition and the construction, keep the Zoom Air, but you see the midfoot is sculpted a little bit differently, so it provides smoother transition and ride. And we've added foam, but the overall weight of the shoe is reduced. And that was work we really focused on female athletes, both at the elite end of the spectrum, all the way down to 12-minute milers who are just trying to run, and both understanding in the moment, how do they respond and perform, but also after the run, how do they feel, right? And what's that, so whether it's muscle damage or just enjoyment.
Yeah.
And it's been positive. It's been a long journey.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Great. Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.